Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Always forget about the Blog Talk Radio. Hello, yes, starting sort of a second here. I am Matt Corey. This is the Over the Monster podcast, episode number 125. I am still attempting to learn how to navigate all this Blog Talk Radio stuff. Apparently, when you hit go live, it actually makes you go live right there. So hooray, here we are. Yes, I'm still attempting to get my co-host here, Mark Normandin, added, and he should be with us shortly. So let's do that. Let's see if we can bring Mark in right now. It's been an interesting day in Red Sox world, Red Sox nation, Red Sox land, and yeah. they fired Juan Nieves. They DFA'd Edward Mojica. Mark.
Yo.
Hey. So we are live. Apparently,
what?
Yeah, when you hit go live, it goes live.
Why did you hit go live? That seems...
Well, my choices were either to do that or to wait until noon, and I can't do that. So I figured I'd hit the go live button and see what happens, and there you are. That's what happens. It's not
probably should have gotten me on the line.
It's not mislabeled. It is what it is. Anyway, so hi, how are you?
I was planning to like get some water and maybe close the window closest to me so that I could hear.
Nah, you don't need to hear. It's me talking.
No, let's just go into this because I'm tired about arguing about the Red Sox rotation on Twitter.
Yeah, that's Twitter's a happy fun time recently in Red Sox Twitter. Hooray, Red Sox Twitter.
I'm just going to have to like get it out on the podcast at some point because it's just...
Yeah. A lot of times, you know, Mark and I talk beforehand. I mean, we always talk beforehand except for this episode, but we talk beforehand before we go live about what topics we're going to discuss on the podcast. And, you know, we don't really need to do that now. I think we could probably guess what those things are. So apologies to the listeners, but I'm going to repeat them because Mark wasn't here. You know, the Red Sox DFA'd Edward Mojica. They've moved Matt Barnes to the bullpen, you know, ostensibly because they're about to call him up. And maybe most interestingly, they fired Juan Nieves, the pitching coach, because I'm not sure. Well, I mean, I guess at least optically, because the pitching staff is horrible.
I was surprised by it at first, you know, just because I didn't really expect it. But the more I think about it, I mean, what has he actually done that you remember kind of attaching to him? His tenure's kind of got a... In 2013, you had a pretty developed veteran pitching staff.
Well, okay, that's a little revisionist. I mean...
Well, no, hold on.
If you remember where they were in 2012...
Yeah, no good pitchers, basically, because they were all hard-core traded.
A really similar staff. They had Buchholz, and they had Lester, and they had other guys whose names I'm forgetting right now.
They were bad.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on.
In 2012,
you didn't let me finish either.
Damn right I didn't. I'm fired up.
Name a young pitcher that Juan Nieves helped develop during his time in Boston.
Oh, he hasn't.
Yeah, thank you.
So
that was the next thing. It wasn't even so much the 2013. It was, you know, in 2013 he did some good work there to help them get back where they were. You know, that's to his credit. Mm-hmm. But then you've got a whole lot of young pitchers. And it's not entirely his doing. You know, these are guys who aren't major league starters or anything, but, you know, he didn't kind of add anything to it. Felix DuBrant really comes to mind as someone who just, and maybe no one could ever reach Felix DuBrant. That's entirely possible.
Well, DuBrant was okay in 2013. I mean,
he was okay.
What?
Okay. And then it, you know, fell apart in 2014 and now.
Yeah.
But I'm less surprised, I guess, as this goes on, especially, what was it, maybe 10 days ago, not even two Porcello starts ago,
yeah.
John Farrell was talking publicly about how the Red Sox really need a new kind of plan of attack for their pitchers. And it's one that they implemented, you know, basically the day he said it.
Yeah.
And that's been going well, but, you know, there's a part of me that wonders if they went to a new plan because whatever one they were working on with Nieves didn't work, and he just really wasn't. You know, everyone on that staff, essentially, except for, like, Tozawa, is pitching at, like, their 10th percentile. And that's just, you know, there's a bigger problem there than your roster. You know, people, even, like, Ken Rosenthal made a joke, like, oh, you need better pitchers, that's the problem. It's like, well, okay, sure, but, you know, the pitchers you have aren't even, this is, like, worse than worst-case scenario stuff. You know, there's a lot of people who are going to claim that they saw this coming, but they didn't. Because it's worse than it should be.
Yeah, it's definitely worse than it should be. I mean, I think, you know, this is a I don't know. I tend to look at this as a, you know, an outlier scenario. But that said, you know, Porcello, he's been better in his last couple starts, but his career. I mean, you know, you look at the, you know, upward trajectory of his skills, and, you know, we all expected more than what he's given this year in total. But his career, he's right about where his career is. I mean, this is roughly his numbers for his career right now.
They didn't sign him. They didn't get him for his career.
Exactly. Yeah, they're expecting more. You know, obviously the extension says we expected him to be much better than he has been in total. This year, but I'm just pointing out his career numbers are about where he's at now. You know, Masterson is a, you know, we've discussed Masterson a lot. You know, he's a buy low guy that, you know, the Red Sox were hoping would be better post injury. He's not been better.
He was definitely the biggest risk there, the most obvious risk, where it's a, you know, situation where, okay, here's a guy who, if everything's together, he could be a number two.
Right.
If he's not together, he shouldn't be pitching in the majors. Like, that's a gap. At least when Buchholz is bad, you know, he's still giving you innings. He's still...
Right.
Yeah, I mean, except for that horrific start, but that was, you know, that's not a Buchholz bad start. That's just an awful start.
Yeah.
You know, even when Buchholz is bad, it's like, oh, he still gave you five or six innings, and he gave up five runs or whatever, and it didn't look good. But, like, with a good lineup, okay, maybe you can do something with it. When Masterson is bad...
He's around. Everyone needs to leave the ballpark bad, you know, 10 straight balls. And I mean, it's sort of oddly, though, I mean, the pitch or the at bat that got him pulled was I didn't think it was that bad. He was facing kind of I forget who the crappy hitter on the Rays is that got hit up his first home run the other day and had the single, the 2-run single yesterday.
Was it Alan Dykstra?
No.
I mean, I was off at that point. I didn't see it live. So
it's nobody. He sucks. But the hit was weak sauce. I mean, he didn't hit it well. He just hit it in a lucky spot. You know, 10 feet in any direction, and that little pop up is an out. It's just sort of bad luck that where it landed. Now Masterson set himself up to have that hurt him. You know, if that's if that happens with a runner on first and that's all, then it's no big deal. Then it's first and second. It's not two runs. Masterson walked the bases loaded or whatever it was. And that's why that hit hurt. But anyway, so, you know, going down the list, Kelly, you know, we sort of knew what Kelly was going in, and he's been a little worse, but, you know. Actually, we'll come back to Kelly and Buchholz because I think there's something interesting with those two guys. The other guy that they brought in, though, this past offseason was Miley, and Miley has been the worst of the group, oddly enough. I kind of figured he was the guy who would be the most steady.
Yeah, he was safe, but I think he was probably the biggest victim of the now, you know, in the garbage plan that they had for attacking hitters. You know, it really seemed like the Sox wanted, you know, they wanted ground balls, but they also wanted these guys to all kind of miss some bats. So I think, you know, there was some kind of, you know, uncomfortable approach with some of these guys. And it really hurt Porcello. You could see he'd give up homers when he really normally would have been throwing sinkers a little lower in the zone, that sort of thing. And for Miley, he just man, he couldn't control anything. He couldn't put anything where he wanted to. And when he did put it in the strike zone, it got hit.
That's the thing. So I think one of the things that made Miley intriguing was the jump in strikeout rate last year. And, you know, that works. I mean, his if you look at him, you know, his career trajectory, he, you know, the first three seasons, he made a leap forward with walks, keeping walks down. And his strikeouts were consistently low, 6.5 per 9, roughly. I should look at it and see what the percentages are actually on this. Let me pull that up while I can. But what was I going to say? Oh, but then in 2014, the strikeouts went up. And I think that's the thing that made me go, hey, if this guy can actually strike out guys at a slightly above league average rate, you know, he's a mid rotation starter instead of a back end starter. And that's intriguing.
See, I just didn't care about the strikeouts in the same way. I mostly wanted him to be able to put the, like, do what he did a little earlier in his career, which was put the ball where people couldn't hurt it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, that might be, you know, and maybe he could get away with what he was doing to increase the strikeouts in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think people forget sometimes the gulf between those leagues when it comes to hitting. It's as simple a thing as, like, you know, you got a couple of pitcher's parks out there in the NL West. Yeah, like his home park was a hitter's park, but, you know, he was a ground ball guy. And, yeah, you've got the – you don't have the DH. And ask Joe Kelly how big of a deal it is when you don't get to face the pitcher every now and then. You know, for a guy who has problems with efficiency –
it's true. It helps and it makes a big difference. But we're talking about, you know, in a good start, you're talking about 2 to 3 at bats total. That's a super chasing a good.
But you know, that can be the difference right there. That can be what ends a rally, what keeps some guys stranded. Yep. It can be, you know, that extra strikeout you get.
Yep. No, it makes a difference. No question about it. I'm just saying, I don't think that's not the difference between a 2-run ERA and a 7-run ERA.
Oh no, not that. I really do think it was just, you know, Miley couldn't. He just couldn't get the ball where he wanted to, and it was weird, and it's not normal for him. And I kind of thought he might be hurt, but,
yeah,
you know, he had a pretty good start last time out, and it was probably a little better than his stat line suggested.
Yeah.
And as the rest of the weekend and the season so far has shown, the Yankees can actually hit. So pitching well against the Yankees is, you know, a positive.
Totally. I mean, they've got guys who – and I think, you know, given perfect health, that team is going to hit. I think that's always been the question with them is are there good players going to be on the field? And, you know, if they're on the field, they're probably going to produce. I don't know. Maybe Teixeira, there was certainly questions about him. He's come back in a big way or had a good month anyway. But anyway, I don't want to talk about the stupid Yankees. So the other
thing. I think we're on the same page in general with the rotation where, you know, there's three guys that – there's reason to believe that they've been doing better and will do better.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, so Masterson didn't work. It's not the end of the world if one of your five guys doesn't work out.
Right. Right. No, that's true. As long as you are able and willing to go and replace them with somebody better, and that's I think, the issue. So, we'll get to that in a second. So the two guys who I'm optimistic about, you know, not living in Boston, I don't get the echo chamber as much, you know, for better and for worse. But, you know, Buchholz, who has a 6-run ERA, I think has actually been super good.
Yeah, he's been great. He basically had two bad starts. And
even the second one wasn't really that bad. He kind of got BABIPed to death, and then Farrell just yanked him. Farrell's another topic.
A little weird.
Yeah. I'm sure he's
a little frustrated with seeing this happen again and again with his starters. So
yeah,
even if it's that, you know, you probably want someone to, I don't know, get a different look.
Yeah. Yeah. So who knows if Buchholz is going to continue to do, you know, what he's done so far. But honestly, if he pitches like he has been, he's going to end up with good numbers. I mean, I don't know how much people buy into FIP. I do buy into FIP. It's not 100%. you know, indicative of how a guy is pitching. But, you know, I think in a small sample size earlier in the year, it's definitely better than ERA. And right now, Buchholz has under a 3 FIP and over a 6 ERA. I mean, that's an insane difference. He's striking out a ton of guys. He's not walking many guys. He's giving up a normal amount of home runs. I mean, he's honestly done, and that's even including, you know, those two starts, that, you know, the first one against the Yankees and whatever the other one was against.
Yeah, he's mostly getting singled to death, and it's weird.
It is weird. It is.
Especially because his thing was always, like, people didn't get hits off of him, and that's how
right.
he succeeded for, you know, like, 5 years, basically. So, you know, with him, too, it might just be a little tightening up of what his plan is.
Yeah.
He might, you know, maybe cut back on the strikeouts a little bit and just, to, you know, focus more on making sure the, you know, because you're striking everyone out, but then you give up 6 singles in a row or whatever, like.
Yeah, I don't see it as a huge
problem. Not everyone who strikes people out is, you know, a great pitcher.
Every starting pitcher with an 11.5 strikeout per 9 is a great pitcher.
I mean, I don't want to say that Oliver Perez ranks in, like, the top 10 all time. I'm gonna say it.
He is. I mean, especially if you talk to his agent.
No, he really is, though. Like, minimum 1,000 innings pitched, he's in the top 10 all time in K rate.
There you go.
So I'm not, you know, I love the strikeouts, but there just might be, it might be like a refocusing thing. And it's the same deal with, you know, Porcello Miley, where you just maybe get a little bit back to living in the zone, low in the zone with the fastball and get a couple more ground outs, a couple more double plays and, you know, hey, double plays, 2 outs.
yeah, it's really helpful.
Strikeouts only the 1 out, and I love strikeouts, but, you know, if you're going to keep putting some guys on with singles or whatever, it's easier to erase them that way, especially with the defense that they have.
So that,
you know, Bogaerts look good defensively.
That's the other thing, yeah, is, and I think this goes into the discussion of the defense sort of perfectly. I mean, we talked about, you know, the Red Sox assembling a pitching staff of, you know, ground ball, pitch to contact guys for the most part. And how does that play with, you know, with the team's defense? And so far, the answer is badly. You know, you can't really look at advanced stats in a small sample like a month. But I think you can, you know, you can look at them and you can, you know, you can also see, you know, what you see with your eyes. And I mean, I did a piece for BP Boston that should be up tomorrow about the Red Sox defense, and so I have some of these numbers fresh in my head. And the, you know, the big problem areas, at least according to most of the advanced numbers, are Hanley Ramirez in left, Pablo Sandoval at third, and Mike Napoli at first. I think we can agree that so far Hanley's been a dumpster fire in left. And
oh, yeah.
That he's probably going to get, I've downgraded my, he can get to league average idea to he can get to a playable level. I do think he can figure it out a little bit out there. He is naturally athletic. He was recently a major league shortstop. You know, he's got some skills. He should be able to play left field, certainly in Fenway Park. So far, it's not worked out that well. But, you know, again, we're a month into the season. I think it can happen. Sandoval is a little more worrisome, and Napoli is very worrisome.
Use the word worrisome. I use the word probably inaccurate.
Okay, well, that's fair. I mean, depending on the defensive metric you look at, some of them have Pedroia as a negative player, and I think that's a load of horseshit.
Set it on fire.
So, yeah.
That is on fire.
Right. So that's the kind of thing, you know, stuff, you know, it's a small sample. You know, there's not enough balls in play at this point to really fairly judge. But the reality of the situation, if you look at overall team defensive efficiency, the Red Sox are a bad defensive team. What they've done to date is – not turn enough batted balls into outs. So that's the fact on the ground. And, you know, whether it's all on Hanley or, you know, spread more evenly between guys who maybe just had a bad defensive month for whatever reason, but actually have more skills than they've shown. I mean, I think you've pointed this out before, Mark. You know, there's, you know, guys have bad offensive months, bad months at the plate, you know, where they're just not hitting the ball properly. It makes total sense that they would also have or could that, you know, a player, either the same player or a different one, could have a bad defensive month.
Absolutely. I would put more of the blame on the pitching, though.
Well, you know, I looked at that actually, and again, you know, we're talking about small sample sizes of numbers, so it's easy to say, it's easy to not buy into it, and that's fine. But just to put it out there, the Red Sox, as a pitching staff, have walked and struck out guys at almost exactly league average rates. Mm-hmm. So they're allowing pretty much a league average amount of balls in play.
That's not the focus of why I think it's
right.
A problem.
Right. So there's more.
All right.
The line drive rate that they've given up, I forget if I think it's right around league average. It might be a little below. And then Baseball Info Solutions categorizes hits as soft, medium, and hard. And I think the Red Sox are definitely below league average in hard hits given up. I think they're right around average in medium hits. And I guess they're above average in soft hits. So I looked at that, and based on those numbers, it didn't look like that the pitching staff was giving up an extraordinary amount of, you know, hard contact. I mean, maybe it's just ill placed.
Well, it's not just the hard contact, though. You know, you get guys like Buchholz, Miley, Porcello, who are not Porcello's more the hard contact, because that's really been his only problem.
Mm-hmm.
But like Buchholz, you know, he's just getting little kind of nickel dime to death.
Yeah.
With single after single after single. And some of them are grounders. They're just not, he's not doing what he had done, which was produce weak contact that was easy for his fielders to field. So I think you see, you know, a ball flies by Sandoval because it wasn't Buchholz's normal thing. And he's the one, you know, both of them end up taking, you know, some value loss from that. But it's not really Sandoval's thing. I think you create this problem with the defensive efficiency when the pitching has not been good enough. Where it's not entirely the defense is doing. You know, like the Pirates a few years ago had this problem too. You know, the defenders weren't good enough and it was a real problem, but the pitching was just so bad that it made the defense seem even worse, just in terms of like a converting balls and playing to outs thing.
Yeah.
So I don't think, I think there is a small sample nature to this, and it's one of those things where you could wave it off and just say, hey, small sample, it'll fix itself.
Right.
Or you could look at it a little closer and go, oh, it's probably something like that. It kind of all comes back to the pitching right now, I think. And there's also this other, you know, when we talk about FIP or whatever, because I realized we skipped Kelly earlier.
Yeah, he sort of falls into the Buchholz category to me. I mean, he and Buchholz are both getting a lot of strikeouts, not getting a lot of walks, and you know their FIPs are both pretty good. Buchholz is better by a significant portion, but Kelly is a 374 FIP and a 572 ERA.
I think a lot of the problem with Kelly is that he kind of lives and dies by whether or not he gives up a big inning.
Yeah.
So he can look great for four innings.
And he has. Yeah, he's done that, I think, in a lot of his starts. He's come out and, you know, put multiple innings together in a row, and then he just sort of comes apart, or, you know, Farrell leaves him out there a little too long. Or, I mean, I think you were talking before about how he's not very economical with his pitches.
Yeah, so the pitch count rides up there. And there is a problem with Farrell maybe leaving him out there too long, but at the same time, you should be able to get the amount of work that Farrell's tried to get out of Kelly in every start. It's not like he's asked him to pitch, you know, into the seventh every time when he's kind of out of gas. This is a matter of, like, Joe, can you please complete five innings? You know? It hasn't always happened. And
Farrell, that's a criticism that I have of Farrell, because he gets these numbers in his head. Like, I want him to complete 5 innings. I want him to complete 6 innings. I want him to
I don't really think it's something you can criticize a major league manager about, hoping one of his starting pitchers can make it to 5 innings.
It's not hoping that they get – I don't have a problem with the hoping. It's the leaving him out there when he clearly can't do it. It's like,
what are you going to do? You have no one they can turn to in the bullpen either.
I'm sorry?
What are they going to do? They don't have anybody they can turn to in the bullpen either.
The bullpen's been fine so far.
Oh, man.
I mean, not amazing, but certainly compared to the starting
pitching coach, it's pretty good.
Yeah, Koji's been all right, you know.
Koji's not going to pitch the fifth, so
yeah.
Joe Kelly has.
I think we should just skip the fifth entirely.
It's really a problem inning.
Six.
But, I mean, that's kind of the thing with, like, with Kelly. I'm kind of skeptical of what his FIP says, because I think he's just been really inefficient, and he's the kind of guy where – yeah, every team is doing Joe Kelly what the Red Sox lineup generally does to other pitchers, which is just wear them down and knock them out.
Right.
So even if it takes them a while to get there, you know, once that explosion happens, you can't take it back. And this keeps happening to Kelly. And, you know, in the NL, maybe he's an everyday starter. Well, not, you know what I mean. Maybe he's a rotation guy. In the American League, I don't think the rotation's really a great place for him long term.
I think he's fine as a fifth starter, but the problem is right now the Red Sox have two or three other fifth starters clogging up the rotation. So, yeah, I mean, this kind of gets us into, the next sort of phase, which is, how do you fix this problem? Obviously Porcello is there to stay. And I think Buchholz has, like I said, I think Buchholz has pitched really well and has just, mostly gotten unlucky.
And it should be noted that Porcello's done really well since he started going back. He tweaked himself and is not giving up the home runs and is pitching like Porcello last year.
Right.
In his last couple of starts. Where, maybe he's not striking out a guy in an inning or whatever, but he's getting the ground ball outs. He's not giving up runs, which, hey, that's allowed to happen, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice, especially in the first inning when the Red Sox come out and they're not immediately down by 2 runs or whatever it is.
So I think between those two and Miley, the 1-3 spots maybe not fine right this second, but I'm pretty sure that they're going to be, and it's not going to take long. A couple more turns through the rotation, we'll be like, okay, Miley's disaster's over. Porcello stopped giving up homers.
Yeah.
Buchholz stopped giving up 15 singles a game.
Right.
And that's fine. But there's the, I hate to invoke them. As the 2011 Red Sox remind us, you need that back end of the rotation to be filled too. So.
Well, and that's kind of the thing too. Like the setup that the Red Sox have, depends on the back end of the rotation being almost as strong as the front end. Because they don't have that top of the rotation guy, to offset the value loss at the end. So you kind of need to have a stronger 4 and 5 in the rotation, for that total amount of production, in the rotation. And so far they haven't got that. They haven't really got it from anybody. So Porcello is the closest thing overall to a league average pitcher, and he's so far 7% below average. So just in total. So,
yeah. But again, we're still at that part where one really bad start out of 6 or whatever screws up your entire line until June. So
yeah, right.
I'll get worried then about that guy. Masterson,
yeah. Well, that's what I was going next. So I think Porcello and Buchholz and Miley are fine. I'm okay with Kelly running out there for some more starts until something else, better presents itself. Ben Buchanan wrote a piece on Over the Monster today, being Thursday, May 7th, saying, okay, enough with the Justin Masterson in the rotation stuff. It's not working. I would love to be able to argue with it. And, you sort of never know when a guy's going to pick it up and the velocity sort of comes back or the control comes back. But considering how he was last year, and that this seems to be an, just an extension of that, it's hard to watch him pitch and walk so many guys and hit a bunch of guys. And yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, he's got a 5.18 ERA, and it feels like it should be or could be easily like 9.
He's definitely escaped a few starts.
Even yesterday when he ended up giving up, what, 4 runs in 5 innings, which, by the way, is not good.
Walked six guys,
hit a guy, and easily could have given up more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, easily. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of always been Masterson's thing, too, is, you know, the ground balls help him get out of stuff. But he's not
throwing 87 when that happened, though.
Yeah, he's not. He can't strike guys out, really. I mean, right-handers, yes. Left-handers, no. I mean, he had problems with lefties even when he was throwing 93.
He had that one year where he fixed it, and you know, it was a whole change in approach and motion and everything. So it was, you know, a believable thing that it could keep going. But it also was predicated on him being able to, you know, throw fastballs that are actually fast.
Yeah, and Ben pointed out in his article today that Masterson has been focusing far more this year on the slider. I think he said he was – I haven't looked it up, but I think Ben said he was throwing the slider like a third of the time, which is more than he's thrown it in the past.
That is a desperation move to make up for the fastball.
Exactly. Try to keep people off the fastball. And, you know, the problem is he doesn't really have control of anything. It's hard to make guys chase when you can't throw a strike. You just go up there and you just wait for him to put one over the plate, because at that point you're going to know what's coming. It's going to be 3-0, 2-0, something like that. You're going to be able to sit on a location. While I wouldn't necessarily yank Masterson from the rotation right now, I could understand it if it happened. And I have a hard time, you know, rebutting the idea, any more than it's only 6 starts and we should give him a little more time to, you know, to make a case that he shouldn't be in the rotation. Part of this, though, is that there's not a whole lot of other options available other than Eddie Rodriguez. So
yeah,
what do you think, Mark, about bringing Eddie Rodriguez up and, I don't know what you do, move Masterson to the pen, move Kelly to the pen, give Miley.
Masterson would be the guy who moves to the pen. I think Kelly is the guy you do better in the pen, but he also hasn't lost his job as the fifth starter.
Well, the other thing that you could do is you could just sort of push guys back. I mean, there's nobody here that you're going to really freak out if they miss a start or if a start goes, you know, if they get an extra day or two off. So maybe you just bring up Rodriguez, give him somebody's start, push the whole rotation back a day each, and just see how he does. And maybe he does well and he feels comfortable and you can just sort of, you know, shoehorn him in from there.
Maybe you do that if your plan is to let Masterson work with a new pitching coach and you want to give him a few days to do that.
Right.
Instead of having him come out and pitch again, you know, that way you can get him 10 days or 12 days or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think I'm fine with bringing up Rodriguez. I don't know if he's ready, but I can tell you right now that Justin Masterson isn't.
Yeah.
So it kind of comes down to that where I don't, you know, he's probably not ready, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm a little worried about how his secondaries will work in the majors right now. And I was hoping more time in AAA had, you know, kind of let him work on those. But, you know, if you're trying to win now and you think he's got some bullets for you, oh, you can give it a shot. And Masterson could help. I mean, if his slider is working well, you know, the fastball maybe ticks up a little bit out of the pen because you can go a little more high effort. You know, he could be a useful piece out of the bullpen, which is also desperately in need of arms.
Yeah.
So maybe you got something there. I'm not in favor of like getting rid of Masterson, especially because Rodriguez might not be an answer.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'd be fine in the next couple weeks if he doesn't show any signs of progress to pull him. It's funny, I was going to write about how Joe Kelly should go to the pen. And then I waited to see what happened in the Masterson start.
Yeah.
kind of glad I did because, you know, the ugly side of Masterson showed up again. And I'm just, I don't know, one of them should go to the bullpen to see if they can help it. And Masterson leaving the rotation is probably going to bring a bigger boost to the rotation and make the team maybe a little less reliant on the bullpen.
I'm with you on that part. The thing that I don't think is that Masterson is going to help in the pen at all. You know, maybe he can come in and face some right-handed hitters, but you've got this guy, this starter who you're paying, you know, whatever it is, $9.5 million a year. Are you really all of a sudden going to make him into a rookie? You know, in May?
If that's what's going to help the team, then yeah. You know, part of the problem too with the Sox is they don't have anyone whose job is to soak up innings out of the pen. Like that guy just isn't there.
Well, that might be Matt Barnes. I mean, they just.
Well, I hope it's not Matt Barnes because Barnes is a guy who could probably be a setup man for them.
Well, I think you're right when you say that they don't have that guy, and Barnes has been pitching out of the rotation in AAA, so he's already stretched out. I think that it's almost unavoidable, especially if the rotation continues to pitch the way they have. I mean, they need
to. That's why you don't make these moves in isolation, because that's a poor use of Barnes. Because then you can't turn to Barnes as often if you're making them pitch long.
Yeah,
I
think that's what's going to happen. I mean, they don't have that guy out of the bullpen unless you're cutting somebody else and moving, you know, Rodriguez into the rotation and moving Masterson to the pen as a long guy / rookie.
Well, they don't have to cut anyone. They have Tommy Lane and Dale Hinojosa in the bullpen right now. Both of those guys can be sent back to Pawtucket.
I thought they sent
both of them back?
No, I thought they sent Hinojosa back.
Okay, they might have, but, you know, Tommy Lane still exists, and his entire purpose is to drive up and down 995 as the Red Sox need.
Okay.
So, you know, they've got the roster space to make two moves if they want to. And again, I don't think they're going to make them right away, but they're going to get to that point. And, you know, Barnes might start out maybe kind of as a sixth inning guy, but I don't think he'll stay there for very long, especially with how much, you know, John Farrell is probably the guy who has pushed the most, from what we can tell, pushed the most for Barnes to go to relief. And it's not a bad call. Barnes didn't stagnate as a starter, but he made progress last year. But it's the kind of progress that you were only really impressed by it if you were desperate for something to be impressed by. So, you know, if you're really just clinging to this dream that Matt Barnes is still going to be a successful major league starter, you know, the second half last year was really great for you, and I'm happy for you. But, it's probably not what he's going to be. You know, he's got the same problems at 25 that he had at 21.
Yeah.
You can point at his stats or whatever and say he did better in the second half last year over his last 50 innings or whatever. He still didn't strike out a batter per inning in the minors. His third pitch was a little better, but it wasn't used often enough, and it's still not a reliable offering.
Right.
His command is still questionable. This sounds like a guy who should go in the bullpen. And if you still think he can be a starter, a great place to find out, better than AAA, is actually in a major league bullpen.
Right.
Because you're going to get this guy coming up. He's going to be attacking hitters out of the pen, as relievers do. And maybe he'll figure something out that he's not going to figure out against AAA hitters. You see a lot of prospects come up as starters, and they're kind of tentative, you know. So, you know, they nibble a little bit, whatever. I mean, it's not often as bad as, like, the Alan Webster experience is, but, you know, this stuff happens. So, hey, go the Earl Weaver way. Put him in the pen, see if he can get some confidence going, see if he can figure something out. Maybe in 2016, you know, see about moving him back to the rotation because, hey, he magically figured out the stuff, you know, against the highest level of competition.
Right.
And if not, Barnes has a ceiling as a high leverage, really productive relief pitcher, and that's it's not a terrible thing.
Right. No, it's true. So, I think that's on tap because Edward Mojica was finally mercifully DFA'd today. So his time with the Red Sox is over.
J.J. Barnes was officially moved to the bullpen at Pawtucket, too.
Yep. So, the Red Sox are off today. It wouldn't shock me if Barnes pitched in the pen today in Pawtucket and then came up on Friday, sat for a night and then ended up pitching on Saturday. I think that's we've entered the period where the Red Sox are okay. Are thinking, okay, it's time to do what we can to stop losing, to stop looking awful. And so there goes the pitching coach, there goes Mojica, in comes Barnes. I think there's going to be more shakeups. Certainly this is going to be an interesting month. I wouldn't be surprised if something happened with Victorino, especially
Yeah,
if just
man, if he doesn't come
if,
back, like, if Victorino does not come back hitting, I cannot imagine that Rusney's going to be in AAA for much longer.
No. The other thing is, don't look now, but Jackie Bradley is hitting really well in AAA. So that's if Castillo is not coming around, I think that could be an option.
Bradley's not hitting that well.
He's hitting really well.
No, he's got a really high average, but he's not really doing anything else. He's not walking that much. He's not hitting for any power. He's striking out pretty much the same way he struck out in AAA before. There's not a lot in the performance that is like, oh, yeah, he's definitely ready for the majors this time.
I don't know if I agree with that. He's got 10 extra base hits in 23 games. Yeah, he's got 15 strikeouts. He's not walking a ton, but honestly, I wouldn't expect him to walk a ton. I would expect him to be swinging the bat. I mean, he's got, it's AAA numbers, but he's got almost a 900 OPS. We know how he plays center field.
I mean, his isolated power is under 100, so it's just not really.
Well, I think if we were talking to the 2013 version of Mark Normandin, you would make the argument that power is not his game anyway.
I wouldn't make that much of an argument. You crush AAA pitchers, I'd say in the majors it isn't. If his ISO was under 100 in the majors and he was hitting for average, that'd be cool. But hey, he's 25 and facing AAA guys he's beaten before. So I'm just not really that excited about it. And he is a guy who's had an ISO of about 200 in AAA before. It's not really.
Yeah, in a pretty small sample, I think that's definitely true.
The thing with Bradley, too, is that he has to tear up AAA, like destroy it. Because what he's done in the majors is fail horribly against inside fastballs, off-speed stuff, breaking stuff on the outside part of the plate. He's not going to see any of that in AAA the way that he would in the majors. So he has to hit so well in AAA to convince the Sox to really put him in a serious position again or convince someone to trade for him. So, like, the line he has now is just, it's not, it's nice. It's just, it's
Well,
not doing it for me.
just remember two things. One is how badly he hit in AAA after they sent him back. He was as bad in AAA last year as he had been in the majors. So I think there's a fair argument, and this would get down to the scouting, and the Red Sox have, I'm sure, done this and have an idea one way or the other on this, more so than I do. But how he, how his approach is, how he's hitting the ball, what changes he's made, what adjustments he's made, and maybe he hasn't made enough adjustments. Maybe it's not there yet. Maybe it never will be. Maybe he burned enough bridges playing as badly as he did last year for as long as he did. I'm still optimistic that he can be a plus player on a good team.
Oh, I still like him. This isn't me go, he's ready now.
Right. And
So it is the Anthony Renato of Jackie Bradley lines.
well, it's still ooh, are we still on air? Yeah, I think we are. Okay. I don't know. The on air button just
Just roll with it. They don't know about the voice.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't mentioning that, but the on-air button just went off. Anyway, whatever. So I think that there could be something there, you know, and we still run into the problem of the, you know, the backlog of outfielders that the Red Sox have accumulated. But as we've seen,
be a problem for long.
No, that's it's not going to be nearly as much of a problem as I think we made it out to be in the off season. You know, Betts is obviously, well, maybe not obviously. I mean, his numbers aren't outstanding, but I think he's hit the ball incredibly well. I think he's hit into some bad luck.
Oh, yeah, he's been great.
I think
have you seen him the last, his line, like the last 12 games or something is like.
Oh, God, it's insane.
Yeah, he's doing what he's, or over the last 15, 16, he's doing what he did last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gets closer to almost a full season's worth of at-bats, like, it's looking like a pretty good rookie year, an unofficial rookie year, essentially, but, you know, he's doing well. He's doing real well. And
I'm super optimistic about him, and, you know, whether that, you know, no matter where that is on the field, whether he stays in center or not, and, you know, Castillo can play, you know, center or right. And I'm optimistic about him too, hopefully, but I mean, I'm optimistic about him. I think the only question I have is, well, I mean, we don't know how good he is really. I still think he's going to be a good player, but we don't know how good he is. The other issue is he's had a fair amount of injuries in a very short amount of time, and you know, with the Red Sox. So I think that certainly is a question mark. And that's another reason that, you know, having a guy like Bradley could be really helpful. And of course, you know, we know that, you know, as great a hitter as Hanley is, he's a little fragile, a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he slammed into a wall at full speed. I don't.
Oh, no, yeah. I don't mean that in a way that is, you know, pejorative, I guess. I mean it in a way that players get hurt when they play baseball, and Ramirez has had injuries before. And, you know, that's just, I think it's part of the game, and especially as you get older, you know, it's easier to get injured and harder to get healthy, and that's just the reality. So, having a guy like a Bradley around who could step in and play a tough position like center or right field and play it well, I mean, honestly, if Bradley can, I think Bradley could play right. How awesome would a Bradley in right field and Betts in center field be? I mean, that would be amazing, defensively.
It'd be great, but, I mean, Rusney's a plus defender, too, and also a natural right fielder.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no, it's fine. I think the Twins,
I'm trying to get rid of Rusney.
They can cobble together a good outfield. You know. Yeah, anyway. So I'm not sure what the team has in mind over the next month, but it's certainly going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of changes.
Yeah, either Victorino's going to hit, or he's going to be on the bench. You know, it's, they can't give him the full season, and I think Victorino knows that too. Part of the reason I assume that, you know, Rusney's back in the minors to begin with, not only, you know, it's partially a rehab assignment, but part of the reason they were like, oh yeah, he needs significant time, is because you don't want to tell Victorino, oh, you lost your job while you're on the DL.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. So it's, to a guy who just came off the DL.
Right.
So give Victorino that last chance. When you call up Rusney, say, hey, we didn't plan on doing this, but our hands were forced, you know, and then.
Another guy who it wouldn't shock me if the Red Sox moved or lost is Daniel Nava. And I'm a huge Daniel Nava fan. And
this does not, he has not looked good.
No, he's looked really bad. And he's 32 and he's a, you know, he's a late bloomer, and the late bloomers are typically, you know, burnout quick kind of guys. You know, he hit into some really bad luck, I think, in April last year, and I disagreed at the time and still do with the decision to send him down.
There's a lot of approach-based problems they had with him.
But he's not – it's not the same this year. He's not hitting into bad luck. At least that's not been what I've noticed through watching him. It felt like last year in April he was hitting everything hard, and it just happened to be at people, and that's just – you know, sometimes the baseball gods are spiteful, but this year it's not that way. He's striking out. He's not walking. He's not hitting the ball hard.
You know, they might be able to sneak him back down to AAA if he's not hitting.
It's possible.
So,
it's possible.
You know, they've done it before.
Yeah. So
he was younger then.
And he's making more money now too. That's the other.
He had options then too.
So, yeah. So his job is certainly on the line. If we go into June without Nava, without Masterson, without Victorino, I don't know. Maybe
I don't think Victorino's going anywhere. I think he'd make a pretty kick-ass fourth outfielder if they're getting rid of Nava.
That's true. I mean, if they're going to get rid of Nava, yeah. I don't know. If we're talking about putting your best team on the field now, I wonder if that includes I'm sure you'll disagree with this, but I wonder if that includes Castillo and put Bradley on the bench and use him as a defensive replacement.
I don't think there's any evidence that suggests that Bradley would be a better hitter than Victorino in a fourth hitter outfielder role.
He might not be.
You don't have to move Bradley anywhere. So I think
it's true. It's
and
true.
Also with Castillo's injuries, I just don't think you want to get rid of Shane. So we'll see.
That's fair. Yeah.
I do agree that his role is probably going to change shortly.
I think I'm not saying that I would cut him. I mean, obviously he's got no trade value at his salary and production level. But he's still, I think, a plus defensive right fielder. You never know with a guy like him. He's not that old, so it's not like he's gone over the cliff. But, it's just possible the injuries have just got to him offensively. He's just not the hitter that he used to be. But I think, considering the way he hit in spring training and the way he's hit so far and the injuries he's had – It wouldn't shock me if the Red Sox just said, listen, thank you for 2013.
Yeah.
But it's time for us both to move on. And in that case, I think you would call up Bradley in a reserve role. Anyway. All right. I think it's time to put a bow on this. Do you have anything, any sad comments to make about the departed Edward Mojica? All righty. Well, is there anything else that we should touch on before we call today?
Should end on something of a high note.
I got something. Okay, go for it.
So, I think there's been some forgetting about Xander Bogaerts a little bit, especially with Mookie starting to do well. Xander's still what? He's 22.
Yeah.
So Xander's 22. He's playing shortstop. He's playing shortstop well. He's not above average or anything at shortstop. But, he looks comfortable. He's playing comfortably. Everything looks smooth.
Yeah.
Looks natural. Last year, he looked like a guy who was afraid that his next mistake would be his last at the position. And the bat isn't where it needs to be yet. But, with the fact that he's got an on-base percentage that he does, he's a comfortably above average offensive shortstop right now, which probably says more about shortstop than it does about Xander. But if he's an above average shortstop, and he's 22, and he hasn't broken out yet, he's still in a pretty good place.
He's just not hitting the ball very well. That's my concern. I mean, a lot of the hits have been really kind of dink and dunk. I mean, he's got two triples, I think.
We're ending on a high note, Corey.
I know I'm ruining it. I understand. Wait, I'm sorry.
The whole thing.
Well,
I just said, even without the breakout,
we'll end on
he's
this.
Still in above average shortstop. That's a high note. Just leave it.
I still think he's going to be a star. I think he's going to be awesome. And in 2 or 3 years, it might take longer than we'd hoped. But I think he's going to be awesome and the middle of the order bat. So there you go. There's your high note. Says the not scout from his parents' basement eating a bowl of pudding. That's what that is. All right. Thanks, Mark. We'll do this again soon, and hopefully we can talk about the Red Sox 10-game winning streak next time.
Yes.
All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. You can write your reviews of how awesome we are on the iTunes. You can follow Mark at Mark_Normandin. You can follow me at MattyMatty2000. We will hopefully do this again next week. We'll talk to you then. End episode. Bye.